Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. This morning we're going to read from Canto 3, Chapter 18. And we're going to start with text number 4. The chapter title is The Battle Between Lord Bor and Hiranyaksha. It's at towards the beginning of creation, because the previous chapters have described the process of creation. Maitreya is speaking to Vidura because that's what Vidura has asked him to speak about. So the details of Garbhadakshay Vishnu producing Lord Brahma, Brahma doing his meditation, getting his realization, beginning the process of creation. And after the creation has begun, the offspring of Lord Brahma, the Prajapatis, and Hiranyaksha and Hiranyakashipu becomes the sons of Diti and Kashyapa, and there is this battle between Hiranyaksha and Lord Varaha. Hiranyaksha has mystic powers. Demons have mystic powers, some. And by his mystic power, he was in service to his elder brother, Hiranyakashipu. He was gathering gold from wherever he could find it. In one purport, Prabhupada explains that he had made a tunnel, like a subway, through the earth, and to get gold from the other side of the earth, which at least he knew the earth was round, and had taken so much gold from over here and put it over there that the balance of the earth planet had been lost, and the earth fell to the bottom of the Garbhadak ocean, which means something about the structure of the universe. There's the upper, the half of the universe is filled with Garbhadak ocean, and then just above the Garbhadak ocean, the lower planetary systems begin, and there's this vertical dimension through the middle planetary systems and the upper planetary systems. So 14 worlds, 7 lower, 7 upper. So the Earth fell out of its orbit into the Garbhadak ocean at the bottom of the Garbhadak ocean. So, Lord, the demigods approached Lord Vishnu help. So, Lord Vishnu came in an appropriate form to go to the bottom of the Garbhadak ocean, was lifting the earth, and very disturbed, Hiranyaksha came to know the earth is being rescued by this mystic personality, and he took some weapons and went to do combat. He found out, it says from the previous chapter, or the beginning part of this chapter, he found out the whereabouts of the Lord from Varuna. There's details. And so he went to where he was told by Varuna the Lord was, and there he found him. So now he's saying these chivalrous words, requesting combat, calling him bad names and saying, I'm powerful, I'll kill you. But the verses of Bhagavad Gita are demonstrated here, that the demoniac personalities think that the mudhas, in the language of Bhagavad Gita, they manushim tanamashatam. They think that the forms of the Lord are material. They think that he, like us, has assumed a material form, and his may be a fancy version, but I, as a demon, I'm powerful also, and I match my power against this other powerful person. They don't see Vishnu as supreme. They cannot, that vision of the supreme is blocked. They don't have a Vishnu as the supreme conception. They want to be supreme. This is the demoniac mentality. And developing their power and their skill and their resources and their everything so they can dominate material nature in a godless manner. So when Lord Varaha appears, he sees him as another entity, another being like himself. Maybe you're powerful, but I'm more powerful. Let's fight. So that's the spirit, starting with text 4. You rascal, this is Hiranyaksha speaking to Lord Varaha. You have been nourished by our enemies to kill us, and you have killed some demons by remaining invisible. Oh, fool, your power is only mystic. So today I shall enliven my kinsmen by killing you. Purport. So the purport, it's taking sometimes that our acharyas do this. The words that are meant, the intention is vilification, but the Lord is meant to be glorified. So they take the words of the vilifier, in this case Hiranyaksha, and turn it into glorification. Just because there's a Sanskrit rule that says you must take the direct meaning of a word in scripture, unless it's just not appropriate to take the direct meaning. To give examples of the Sanskrit technicality. And if it's just not appropriate, then you're obliged to take a secondary meaning, otherwise you're obliged to take the primary meaning. So Lord Vishnu is to be glorified. Even if it's coming from the mouth of a demon, the secondary meaning is to be taken because it's glorification. So that's what's going on here in the purport. The demon used the word abhavaya, which means, quote, for killing. Sridhar Swami comments that this killing means liberation, liberating, or, in other words, killing the process of continued birth and death. The Lord kills the process of birth and death and keeps himself invisible. The activities of the Lord's internal potency are inconceivable, but by a slight exhibition of this potency, the Lord, by his grace, can deliver one from nescience. Shuchaha means miseries, semicolon. The miseries of material existence can be extinguished by the Lord, by his potential energy of internal yoga maya. In the Shvetashvatara, in the Upanishad, Shvetashvatara Upanishad, it is stated, Parasha Shaktir Vividaiva Shruyate. The Lord is invisible to the eyes of the common man, but his energies act in various ways. When demons are in adversity, they think that God is hiding himself and working by his mystic potency. They think that if they can find God, they can kill him just by seeing him. Hiranyaksha thought that way, and he challenged the Lord. Colvin, you have done tremendous harm to our community, taking the part of the demigods, and you have killed our kinsmen in so many ways, always keeping yourself hidden. Now I see you face to face, and I am not going to let you go. I shall kill you and save my kinsmen from your mystic deeds. Paragraph. Not only are demons always anxious to kill God with words and philosophy, but they think that if one is materially powerful, he can kill God with materially fatal weapons. Demons like Kamsa, Ravana, Hiranyakashipu thought themselves powerful enough to kill even God. Demons cannot understand that God, by his multifarious potencies, can work so wonderfully that he can be present everywhere and still remain in his eternal abode, Goloka Vrindavan. Text 5. The demon continued, when you fall dead with your skull smashed by the mace hurled by my arms, the demigods and sages who offer you oblations and sacrifice in devotional service will also automatically cease to exist like trees without roots. Purport. Demons are very much disturbed when devotees worship the Lord in the prescribed ways recommended in the scriptures. In the Vedic scriptures, the neophyte devotees are advised to engage in 9 kinds of devotional service, such as to hear and chant the holy name of God, to remember him always, to chant on beads, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, to worship the Lord in the form of his deity incarnation in the temples, and to engage in various activities in Krishna consciousness to increase the number of godly persons for perfect peace in the world. Demons do not like such activity. They are always envious of God and his devotees. Their propaganda not to worship in the temple and or church, but simply to make material advancement for satisfaction of the senses, is always current. The demon Hiranyaksha, upon seeing the Lord face to face, wanted to make a permanent solution by killing the personality of Godhead with his powerful mace. The example of an uprooted tree mentioned here by the demon is very significant. Devotees accept that God is the root of everything. Their example is that just as the stomach is the source of energy of all the limbs and the body, God is the original source of all energy manifested in the material and spiritual worlds. Therefore, as supplying food to the stomach is the process to satisfy all the limbs of the body, Krishna consciousness, or developing love of Krishna, is the sublime method for satisfying the source of all happiness. The demons want to uproot this source because if the root, God, were to be checked, the activities of the Lord and the devotees would automatically stop. The demon would be very much satisfied by such a situation in society. Demons are always anxious to have a godless society for their sense gratification. According to Sridhar Swami, this verse means that when the demon would be deprived of his mace by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, not only the neophyte devotees, but also the ancient sagacious devotees of the Lord would be very much satisfied. Bhagavad Gita Sorry for being late. Apologies for keeping you waiting. Bhagavad Gita is sometimes called Gita-Upanishad because the Shruti portion of the Vedas, is directly from the personality of Godhead. At least scholars take it that the Smriti portion of the Vedas is later work. It's explanatory work explaining the Shruti portion of the Vedas. And they make, scholars make this distinction. And Jiva Goswami in his Tattvasandarbha, without all the detail, makes this very clear presentation that when Vyasa took the original Veda, which was one, and divided it into four departments or compartments of Vedic sacrifice, from those original, that original one Veda, other portions of the Vedas were presented from the same set of verses. From the same set of verses means there's a certain number of them, and some of them directly used to compile the Shruti portion, and then some remained, and that became the Smriti portion. But it's the original one Veda. And he gives Shruti mantras that say that. So what I'm saying here is the distinction is artificial according to what the Shrutis say. There's one Veda, and the Smritis are part of that one Veda. Sometimes it's called the fifth Veda. But because scholars are revered in this world, and that's the for those that know something about the Vedas, that's the common conception, which what I'm saying here is it's a misconception. Say it positively. The Shrutis are as Vedic as the Smritis. That's what the Shrutis say. They're now less Vedic. There's some further details. But for those people that have that other idea, the Smritis are not Vedic, they give some special place to Bhagavad Gita because Bhagavad Gita is spoken by Bhagavan. Just as the Vedas, the Shrutis, are directly from Narayana or directly from Krishna, so Bhagavad Gita is directly from Krishna. So therefore, Gita Upanishad is given that special place amongst all of the Vedas, spoken by Krishna. So when Krishna speaks, it's absolute. It's as absolute as anything can be absolute. Of course, the whole of the Vedas has that same force, same power, same potency. But even the scholarly group, they give special place to Bhagavad Gita. So, how to understand Bhagavad Gita? Well, part of the function, a major part of the function of the Puranas is in the course of narrating history, Puranas and Itihasas, their histories, it gives some clarification as to what the Shruti portion means. What does it look like? In real life, what does it look like? Like, just a very simple example. There may be some description of ideal household life. In the Bhagavatam, there is. And it's one thing to hear about ideal household life. It's another thing to see one. Here's an ideal householder. Oh, that's what it looked like. So the histories, they're actual histories. They're not mythology. Histories that illustrate the principles found in the Shrutis. That's how they give an explanation. This is what it looks like. And both are dharma and adharma. So, for example, in Bhagavad Gita, there's a whole chapter of the divine and demoniac nature, and now we're seeing the demoniac nature exhibited by Hiranyaksha. And it's not that all demons are alike. There's diversity amongst demons. But Hiranyaksha is exhibiting the character and quality of a demon, and there are certain common elements, at least in Hiranyaksha's case. He is seeing that which is God, or the supreme source of everything, in a wrong way. And he's articulating how he sees. Both Hiranyaksha and Hiranyakashipu were in various ways learned. They knew many things. They knew that things that are Vedic. Just like, take for example, right in the verse, they knew something about mystic power. They knew from whence it comes. And they knew how to get it. And they knew how to use it. And they used it in demoniac ways. And demoniac ways means in opposition to the will of the Supreme. So the pinnacle of such a person, like Hiranyaksha, is to try to kill God. You have mystic powers, I have mystic powers, I'm going to defeat you. Now, where did Hiranyaksha get, or where does anybody get mystic power? Same question his brother, Hiranyakashipu, asked Prahlad, where are you getting your power? Because I'm almighty. Nobody's more powerful than me, but you are more powerful than me. Where are you getting your power? And Prahlad's answer, from the same place that you are. There's one supreme. But just as Hiranyakashipu couldn't take it, supreme. So, the one source of everything. Let me kill, where is this Vishnu? I'll kill him. Same idea. You're Vishnu, and he knew that the demons, in this case, Hiranyaksha, he knew that the demons derive strength from Vishnu. So if I can kill Vishnu, the demigods are finished. So cutting the tree, uprooting the tree by root, or anything else. But there's a yard up here in the corner, it's dandelion loca. There's a zillion and a half dandelions over there. And I'm sure because dandelions, they just let them grow, and then those little fuzzy things, and they go flying around and fills the neighborhood with dandelions. So it doesn't work just to get a lawnmower out and mow the lawn, and so the tops are gone, but the root is still there. The more dandelions are going to grow because the root is still there. So to get rid of the dandelions, you have to pull the root, and then the dandelion won't grow anymore. Similarly, because the the demons and the demigods are in opposition to one another, and the demigods derive their strength from Vishnu, let me kill Vishnu. It's the demoniac spirit. An educated demon wants to kill God, kill Vishnu. And so the Prabhupada doesn't go into it so much here, but elsewhere he does. They're scientists, not all scientists, but a large portion of scientists their inspiration, motivation, purpose of life is to kill God. There's a BBC, British Broadcasting Company, video where they interviewed different scientists of some years ago, I don't know, a good number of years ago. But some were very explicit. My mission, our mission as scientists is to put God in his place, out of the picture. That's their inspiration. It's not get to the bottom of things. Now, obviously, there are some scientists that aren't of a demoniac disposition, and they really want to know. And those persons who really want to know come to a different conclusion than those who are of demoniac disposition. And demons can be very powerful. They can be very learned. They can be very, so many things. And just like this word kriti, kriti means piety. But then you put a prefix, there's sukriti and there's duskriti. Like Hiranyaksha, Hiranyakashipu, he underwent severe austerities. For what purpose? He wanted to become God. He wanted to, I'm already in charge of everything. I bumped off the king of heaven, and now I'm occupying his post. I'm ruling heaven and earth. I'm the most powerful person. Now I just need to live forever, and I'm God. That's the wish. So if God becomes removed by word jugglery or scientific experiment, or in some cases here by physical weapons, then I'm supreme. And I have no opposition because the demigods will be uprooted if Vishnu is killed. It's a, materially speaking, it's a nifty plan. And his chivalrous talk, rascal, fool, and things like that, it's just part of chivalry. So seeing that which is not ordinary as ordinary, or derived from an ordinary source, competing with God up to the point of trying to kill God, demoniac spirit. The chapter of Bhagavad Gita dealing with divine and demoniac nature makes it very clear. Material competition is a big part of demoniac nature. It doesn't mean that there's no transcendental competition within the spiritual realm, but the transcendental competition within the spiritual realm is who can please Krishna best. So one group of gopas, one group of gopis, they want to please Krishna best. And one who pleases Krishna best, they're very happy because Krishna is pleased. There's not enmity. The competition that's of the spiritual realm, there's no enmity. Competition isn't I win so you lose, or you win so I lose. It's Krishna wins. Transcendental competition. But material competition is I win, you lose. And that's materialistic society. Having at its root, God should lose and I should win. But it may be not explicit, maybe just an assumption. But if it's godlessness, the competition between one and another is God's out of the picture. So I win, you lose. And if you win, I lose. God's out of the picture. It's pretty simple. Put God in the picture and God wins, whoever wins, because he's pleased. And let us compete towards Hook, and please, Krishna, more Prabhupada explained this in terms of book distribution, when he purposefully would challenge this leader or that leader. Oh, this leader is more books are being distributed over there than over here. Are you going to let that happen? Or are you going to? But so he inspired competition. Of course, the consciousness of the participants in that inspiration weren't necessarily in the transcendental plane. But he was trying to train us here. What's it like in the spiritual world? And the spiritual world position is to please Krishna. It's we had this experiment. We learned from the experiment. In Gita Nagari, one of the retreats that we had, there was an idea to engage the children in, you know, the larger hall, aside from the over there, those children are having their activities. So it was staged that the boys would be on one side and the girls on the other side. And it got way out of hand. And we decided we're not doing that again. Because it was really like, let's defeat them. And no, they're never going to be defeated by them. The material spirit just spiked. So, big mistake. Rather, it's the greater challenge is to teach children not to compete in I win, you lose, and if you win, then I lose, but how Krishna should be pleased. That's an art, the art of spiritual activity. So, because I came late, some of you have to go. So I'm just going to end abruptly and see if there's any discussion. Hiranyaksha, chivalrous talk with Lord Varaha. We're going to hear Lord Varaha speak shortly. No, he's having this exchange with a demon, and he speaks strongly. Any discussion? Yes.
Thank you, Professor. Two questions. One is regarding chanting on beat.
Regarding what?
Chanting on beat.
Chanting on beat, okay.
Why do we have to chant on beat?
We don't have to. Why do we? There are several reasons. Our acharyas did. That's a good start. And why did they? Because it's a very natural procedure for keeping track of a vrata that one makes. I take this vow. I'll chant a certain number of mantras. So you don't have to pay extra attention to how many mantras you chanted. You just move the beads. Another reason is it helps concentration, because there's tactile sense combined with auditory and vocal sense all around the same activity, the name. So connecting the senses to the activity, you know, the consciousness to that activity is assisted. And then we use Tulsi because Tulsi is auspicious, the mother of devotion. We put all those reasons together, that's why we use beads.
Mm-hmm. One more question. You said, should be part of the whole Veda. And then when Vyasadev, he compiled them.
No. There's one Veda. Kali Yuga is coming. Vyasadeva saw it coming. So for the benefit of the people of Kali Yuga, he took the one Veda, certain number of verses, and divided them into four. When he divided them into four, there were some remaining verses of that one Veda. And he, knowing that people, as Kali Yuga advances, they will not understand the message and the purpose of the Veda, now the four Vedas. So he gave explanatory presentation from those same original verses, and thus the fifth Veda, from the original one. Mm-hmm. And the Shrutis, some of the Shrutis, speak of the fifth Veda. Now, scholarship doesn't speak of the fifth Veda. Scholarship speaks of the four.
But there is some chronological factor to it, where, like for example, Mahabharata, like, comes later after the.
Well, who says it comes later after the? Scholarship. So we're putting the scholar folks over here. We don't, you know, they have their way of doing things, and they have the reasons behind their way of doing things. But, you know, it's part of one exercise that Vyasa is the compiler. It didn't, you know, like, that's at some later point in time. I suggest to understand this topic, read Tatrasandarbha, Pramana Khanda section, and it's very clear. And, you know, it doesn't expand, it gives principles. But once you understand the principles, then you can apply those principles. Some people say of the scholarly group, well, yeah, fifth Veda. Okay, fifth Veda. But these are histories. And so the history portion, the fifth Veda portion, is that part of the Shrutis that speak of histories, because the Shrutis are eternal and histories are temporal. And so that's what it refers to. He addresses that view. So, read Pramana Khanda section. It's really short. It's weighty, but it's not, you know, too many verses. And he and then Baladev Vidyabhusan gives commentary on the Pramana Khanda, on the Sandarbhas. At least that Sandarbha. So then there's his commentary available. Bhaktivedanta Book Trust. I gave a seminar on this thing, so it's also there in a much more expanded detail. You can go there and listen. Yeah.
Maharaj, like, demonic tendency, like, there's a belief that I follow something, you know, then I get power. Like, belief, at least there is belief in the process to become powerful.
Mm.
But I'm just thinking, like, how the, you know, how is it the mental switch is that they're not able to accept the source, like, or competing with God? Though, like, you know, I'm believing in, you know, the process of becoming powerful like that. Just intriguing myself.
I don't understand your question. Are you saying there's this logical big gap that if I'm getting power from something else, that means there's something else that's more powerful than me from which I'm getting power? And why don't they see that? Is that what your question
is?
They're demons. It's just competition. Look, you're powerful, he's powerful, the other one's powerful, and it's a free-for-all. And who's going to be more powerful? And I'm going to be more powerful. There's no God. It's just, it's part of the default mode. There's no power from which, powerful greater than all of us, from which we're deriving power. It's just, it's blocked. It's a game, and we all just play the game. And who created the game? You don't go there. There's material. It's like, you know, mechanistic science. There's only one thing: matter, and the laws governing matter. There's no God. So where does matter come from? It's just, that's God. It's primordial. There's matter, laws governing matter, and we're playing the game. And we're into, and so the atheistic person doesn't need the source of Prakriti and the laws governing Prakriti and who oversees the maintenance of the laws of Prakriti. They don't need that. Okay, and he has a question after yours. After yours, go ahead.
We also hear that one will endure or suffer based on one's own past karma. So, like, when a person works hard and becomes successful, so how is that karma coming into the play?
How, like, is, you karma know, coming
because
to
of
play?
The past karma, one is going through suffering, or like one is not successful in their endeavors. But when they work hard, like taking austerity or, you know, working hard, they become powerful or successful. So, so that's the conclusion I have.
It's not just by working hard that one can become successful. Some persons don't work hard and they're successful. Some persons work hard and work hard, work hard, and they're not successful. It's not one factor only. There's sanction of the Supreme. So there's five factors to action, Bhagavad Gita, and one of them is Ishvara. But if someone by hard, so one of them is endeavor. So if I endeavor, if I don't endeavor, the action doesn't take place, or success in action doesn't occur. But I can, so endeavor is necessary, and that I'm, you would say, I'm depleting my stock of pious activities. I have this warehouse behind me, some pious, some impious, and some mixed. So if I draw upon the pious, to the foreground may come some success, but I'm depleting the stock of piety. And in any case, it has to be sanctioned by the Supreme. Even I may be trying to be drawing from my stock of piety, it's not coming. There's the valve, the controller, the Ishvara. So then, as you said, some austerity. So people do austerities, and there may be a demoniac or an atheistic spirit behind the austerities without the conception of God.
Hare Krishna. So sometimes the very demonic nature, some other people might have the conception of destiny and then the super soul and all.
Conception of what was the first part?
Destiny.
Destiny.
So I mean, I was just remembering when Hiranyaksha got killed, Hiranyakashipu tries to pacify the mother.
Hmm.
And he talks about the philosophy and destiny.
Mm-hmm.
And what is the conception? I mean, that means he knows that there is a God, and so he is trying to become God. I mean, he cannot.
Well, he is trying to supersede him, not exactly become him, but put him in his place. I'm more powerful. It's irrational. Look for a good reason, you won't find one. But there's a bhava, asura bhava, that's, you know, flows in a certain direction. And it can be, you know, can rise and fall. It can be more spirited and, you know, more complacent. So, on the, it's quite unreasonable. It's quite, there isn't a good, a logical explanation. Over here he's speaking about karma and the destiny of the soul, and the soul moves on, so don't lament for the destiny of the soul because the soul isn't killed. And that all of that, those story within the story within the story, all of what he does, Hiranyakashipu, he understands the eternal soul. And he understands to a degree, destiny is, the body is temporary anyways, so when the soul leaves the body anyways, no cause for lamentation. But like his brother, and it's very explicit here, your demoniac, you know, a demoniac view sees you're the root of this system, and I'm going to surpass the system. I'm going to become immortal, and I'm going to kill you. No, you've got this system set up. You're hiding because you're afraid of us. You're hiding because you're afraid of us. In this hidden position, you're doing all these things. I'm going to get you. Your system is ruling. I'm going to take care of you. And then there's another system in place. It's quite unreasonable. But, you know, that's that demoniac nature. Yes.
With Maharaj, how to teach kids about the point we're telling about competition?
About competition?
Because when I am with kids around, I hear so much about kids telling about competition, and somehow it goes in a way like as a revengeful way of to get things done.
Say the last part again, because...
Because sometimes like kids tell that they feel angry to get things done when something is not done between other kids, and then it comes like revenge.
Revenge. They have an expectation someone's going to do something. If someone doesn't do the something, they become angry and they want to get back.
Yes.
Well, that's different than competition. But... you know, this, I'm not a parent. So, you know, the different ways in which parents can teach children something other than competition, you have to ask other parents. But the principle is Krishna is to be pleased. And, you know, your responsibility, each of our, my responsibility, your responsibility, our responsibility is to be thinking what will please Krishna. And so is this something that's going to be pleasing to Krishna? After all, is it your happiness or Krishna's happiness that's, you know, the measure of whatever happens, the success of it or lack of it? And it can, the same can apply to adults. If we have expectations of others and others don't match our expectations, we're disappointed. And then we have feelings towards those that disappointed us, like they did it to me. They disappointed me. We're the problem. We had an expectation that didn't get met. So we have to change the channel. So helping the children change the channel is just being consistent yourself. And, you know, like the sun helps a plant grow towards the sun, be the example, both by Achar and Prachar, how Krishna is to be pleased. So when the child is feeling frustration because of an expectation, see if it's however the child can best understand, Krishna is to be pleased. And my business, your business, is trying to please Krishna. Now supposing you're thinking, well, I was expecting that they would please Krishna this way and they didn't please Krishna this way. So now, how do you process that? How do you convey what you know, you're processing? Best as if I and you and we can help the world or help that individual or some group of the world come to the position where pleasing Krishna becomes more important. Because when we're thinking pleasing Krishna, that's the best performance. So then see if the child can go back to what about your performance. If you want the world to be better, start here. What are some of the things that you would like to do to please Krishna, and it's falling short of your intention of pleasing Krishna? Let's put attention there. Then you can show others this is how you do it. It's not, you know, a distraction, it's the principle. But it's not just, getting their mind off of the retaliation thing and putting it on a positive thing. It's the real solution. Gandhi's famous phrase, be that which you'd like the world to be. Yad yad acharati shrestas.